The four members of the Emerson String Quartet have done something no other quartet has ever accomplished. They've recorded all eight parts of the octet by Felix Mendelssohn, a feat that was impossible before computer-assisted recording, which raises the question, is this performance an artistic milestone or a marketing stunt? Joel Rose of member station WHYY has more.
On paper, Mendelssohn's octet is scored for two string quartets. The Emerson String Quartet discovered they couldn't just record one and then the other. There's a lot of blurring between the two. So the Emersons had to record the piece in different configurations, four instruments at a time, to get the interpretation they wanted.
The beauty and genius of Mendelssohn's writing is such that there's a great deal of fluidity from one instrument to the other and passing around the material.
Violinist Eugene Drucker says the musicians played on two separate sets of instruments, even sat in different chairs, depending on which parts they were playing. So in the end, it would sound like there were eight different players on stage. A few months after recording the first pass, the musicians got together again and added what was left. The group had to make most of the artistic decisions the first time through, says violist Larry Dutton, because by the time they recorded the second round, there was no going back.
It was like playing with these really great players that just were so consistent, and they did the same thing over and over again. You know, you would try to ask them to change, but they wouldn't change, you know, and then you'd say, well, okay, that's a good idea, I believe that, I'll do it like you.
But the Emerson's octet may be too much of a good thing, says music critic Pierre Roux of the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. What gets lost in the recording, says Roux, is the spontaneity and tension of a performance with two different quartets.
That's just really engaging to hear and really makes your head spin because the possibilities and the arguments and what he said and what the other person said. And the Emerson are, in fact, eliminating a little bit of that. And it's not so much about the interaction and it's not them having to struggle with another group. It's some kind of perfection.
And even Roux admits that the Emerson's Mendelssohn recording is technically perfect. If you played it on the radio, he says, no one would know there were only four players. Getting that seamless sound was a challenge for the Emerson's longtime recording engineer, Dahong Situ. Not only did he have to fit all of the musical pieces together, but he had to use special equipment that could play back and record a string quartet at the same time.
The previous computers I was using just simply couldn't handle it. So for that particular project, I wound up building a double processor computer just to do this project.
The Emersons are hardly the first classical musicians to test the limits of recording technology. In 1946, shortly after the invention of magnetic tape recording, violinist Yasha Heifetz recorded Bach's Concerto for Violins and Orchestra, playing both violin parts.
Today, that recording is, in fact, mostly a curiosity. And I think that might be the fate of a lot of technology-driven productions.
Music critic Pierre Roux says classical musicians today use the recording studio in more subtle ways. Virtually all performers use overdubbing to fix mistakes, and many so-called live recordings are actually stitched together from the best parts of different concerts. But there are some performers who've used the studio to create recordings that would have been impossible otherwise. In the 1960s, Canadian pianist Glenn Gould retired from live performance in order to produce meticulous studio recordings, editing together multiple takes to highlight individual voices.
He was, in a way, eccentric enough that he could make it work because he'd be able to have arguments with himself, in effect. So he would be playing a Bach fugue, and the individual lines would each have a lot of personality.
In effect, says Roux, Gould was an artist who used the recording studio as an extension of the piano. But he's not sure the Emerson String Quartet has reached that lofty goal with its Mendelssohn recording. In fact, Roux wonders if it's just a gimmick designed to sell records.
Here's one of the great string quartets of our time. How do they justify yet another recording of a work that's been recorded countless times before? Well, one way is to get technology involved.
The members of the quartet counter that there are valid artistic reasons for the new recording. They say it's part of a four CD set that also includes all of Mendelssohn's string quartets, tracing his evolution as a composer. And violist Larry Dutton says the Emerson recording of the octet really is different from those that have come before.
by having us play all the parts, you're getting a real unified sound, unified in terms of, you know, how you make a sound, you vibrato and the bow strokes and all that. When you do it with another group, it takes a long time to get that together. Maybe you never really get it quite together.
The Emerson String Quartet has played Mendelssohn's octet with many other quartets over the years. Violinist Philip Setzer may be only half-joking when he says that had something to do with how they recorded it.
By doing it with ourselves, we didn't insult any of the many friends out there. We were thinking, well, who are we going to record this with? This is a way to kind of cop out on that whole thing and just say, oh, we're not going to play with any of you. We're going to do it ourselves.
We insult all of them.
We insulted them all equally.
Of course, if they want to play the piece live, they'll still have to decide which quartet to call. For NPR News, I'm Joel Rose.